Welcome to Oh Say Can You See. I'm Mark Sabatowski. This show is brought to you by the CTV Society, which is a direct descendant of the Society for Economic Equality, from which at one point it split off from. But our show and our society was actually founded by a man named Frank Girard, who was an English teacher who taught in the Granville Public Schools for many years. And many people who had Frank as an English teacher, I saw at Frank's funeral, say that he was the best teacher they ever had throughout their public school experience. And Frank Girard, he died somewhat recently, and tonight's show is our way of a tribute toward Frank Girard, who is our founder, our mentor, and in some ways, I suppose, the person who felt like, you know, some of us went astray, etc. But Frank was a human. He was a flamboyant man. He was a fun-loving man. And I'm going to introduce my panel here tonight, also paying tribute to Frank Girard. We have longtime member of the Socialist Labor Party and the successor party in Grand Rapids, the split off from that, which was known as the Society for Economic Equality, Mr. Dick Wiedemann over here. Dick.
Hi there.
And we have Margot Channing over here, a longtime member of the Society for Economic Equality, as long as I was, and also of the CTV Society. And as I said, I'm Mark Sapatowski. I'm the moderator tonight. And right over this way, we've got Rick Chapla, who was the first producer of this television show 8 years ago, and also a longtime member of the Society for Economic Equality and of the CTV Society, a close associate of Frank Girard. And over here we have Stephen Durst, and et cetera, all the things, the same things apply to Stephen Durst. We're the old crew of the Society for Economic Equality turned CTV Society, more or less, and we're here tonight to pay tribute to Frank Girard. And we want you to see some of Frank Girard. If we can go with our first roll-in, we'll come back and we'll jump right into the meat of what Frank Girard meant. What was he about? What was he saying? We could, Frank Girard, if we're ready to go with that.
Good job, Mark.
All right, Frank Girard, take it away, Frank.
For example, murder is defined in a certain way, and certain people who commit murder are prosecuted under this society. But, you know, there are an awful lot of mass murder going on, and it has gone on historically, and that hasn't been prosecuted. For example, the bombing in Baghdad. You know, who are the mass murderers there? Well, Bush, the Army general staff, the commanders in the field, people like that, people who dropped the bombs. These people are mass murderers, bombing and killing women and children. But this is never prosecuted, is it? Unless you get to a Nuremberg trial, the Iraqis had won, well then I suppose Bush and company would have been in trouble. But you see, the real murderers in our society are not really prosecuted. And let me give you another example. This is something quite recent, and that is the discovery that tobacco company executives were lying. Now, I don't know what you think about tobacco. Some of us are perhaps smokers. But the real point of the matter is that these people are selling something that's a poison. They know it's a poison. And who prosecutes them? Nobody. You see? So the decisions are made that serve the interests of the ruling class in our society, which is to say the capitalists and their hangers-on that Steve was talking about, the congressmen and the officials and that sort of thing.
Frank, might that have something to do with the fact that tobacco manufacturers are high contributors to political campaigns?
There you have it. I don't think there's any question of this. These kinds of decisions are made at the highest level. And it's awfully hard to, for example, one of the really tough things to prove is bribery, you know.
Right.
Congressmen are actually bribed, I suppose, in the case of Packwood.
It's called pack money.
Yeah.
Not pack wood, pack money.
Yeah, pack money. I suppose it's awfully hard to prove that. You know, we talk about congressmen or legislators or whatever being bought. Well, the thing is, to some extent, they're simply going to listen to whoever contributes to their campaign funds, whether we're talking about Ehlers, who we're talking about. You know, I don't know they're guilty of accepting bribes, except in a very general way that it's pretty hard to turn down somebody who the request of somebody who just contributes $1,000 to your campaign fund. You know?
Well, it's legalized bribery. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Do you have a comment, Mark?
Well, you know, I think it's really strange that in this society where crime rates have been going down, I think, for like 10 years, that we've developed this big fear of crime so that we think that it's this tremendous, that street crime is this tremendous problem. There is a problem, but I think it's used as a smokescreen to divert us away from other real issues. Back when the current Clinton administration was trying to have a national debate on or discussion, dialogue on healthcare in this country, and the fact that so many of us don't have any health insurance or real access to medical care, that the crime issue seemed to rise up, and the media seemed to float this issue in front of us as if it was something to divert us from what was really going on. Other than that, I'd say that I agree with Frank. Where's the real crime? And when you have poor people who don't have an outlet for their ambitions because employment, they can't find it, or they can only find inadequate employment, doesn't pay much, or it doesn't occupy them all the time because they're underemployed, because employers don't want to employ people full-time, then in an economy like this, where jobs actually overall are disappearing rather than occurring more and more, you have people subsisting as they can, and we call that crime, and we arrest those people, and we throw them in prison, and like Steve said, it becomes a growth industry.
Yeah.
You know, it's an injustice.
Spend somebody money.
Yeah. I'd like to comment on what you said about the media and crime, the publicity it gets, because I have an article here. This is a magazine called Turning the Tide, kind of a radical magazine, Turning the Tide. Anyhow, there's a review in it of three books, and one of the books, America Behind Bars is the title of it. It points out that from 1992 to 1993, the actual crime rate remained much the same, but the media coverage of crime doubled, and U.S. popular opinion followed suit. In mid-1992, a New York Times CBS News poll showed less than 2% of the respondents considered crime to be the country's most important problem. By April 1994, crime became number one choice for most. So there you have it. This has blown way out of proportion.
Yeah.
And one of the things that bothers me is that we end up by distrusting each other in a community where people ought to at least have some trust for each other, you know, and trust other people.
Yeah, we're allowing it to be one of those things pushing us away from community. We're retreating behind our own walls and staring at our own TV sets, and we don't know the neighbors usually anymore. Even mm-hmm. We're becoming a very strange society.
You don't trust, you know, as far as, for example, sex crimes. You don't trust your own relatives, for God's sakes, with your children. You know, it's become that kind of a thing, and I think it's really a frightening development in our society. society culturally. I really do.
You know, one thing that's really important about this whole crime issue, crime as a growth industry, as Stephen was pointing out, is that it's especially taken off with that war on drugs, as it was being called back during the Reagan administration. Hey, that was from November 15th, 1995, one of our earliest shows, within 4 or 5 months of our earliest shows. And, you know, there you see Frank Girard very tuned in to the idea that certain issues can be smokescreen issues, and yet it all comes down to the economy, stupid, and who controls it, and why some people might want to send you off in the wrong direction, kind of on a wild goose chase or on kind of a wild crime chase. Even when crime rates go down in America, reporting of crime goes up. And Frank was very tuned into this idea that the media is controlled by the money. It's kind of the follow the money idea, you know. Follow the money, you know, who pays for the politicians to have their campaigns, to get elected, to convince people that the truth isn't the truth. And to get some reaction to briefly to the roll-in, we'll go to Dick Wiedemann, and perhaps any comments he might have about that.
Well, I think it's interesting that you see this was done in 1995.
Right.
9 years ago. And we see the same thing being done today in the current election for president with...
Even more so, yeah.
Bush's notion for the constitutional amendment that he's in favor of. That's another smokescreen and a diversion.
Which amendment is it?
The amendment to for against gay marriage, to define marriage as between a man and a woman.
Yeah, the world is on the brink of World War III, and he's concerned about who's having sex with whom. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We must stop those evildoers before
sodomize
again.
Yeah, so I was just saying, I think this is what he was talking about with the diversions with crime and so on, and the attention on that is a smokescreen for the other things that are going on economically in the country is also true today. Mm-hmm. We see it in the current political campaigns.
Rochelle?
I was just going to add to that Frank mentioned about the bombing of Baghdad. Now, obviously, he was referring to the 1991 Gulf War, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he was, actually.
He was referring to Clinton's bombing in April of 93.
Mm-mm. It was an ongoing thing. It was going on for years. Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was kind of relevant today.
You're both right.
The same thing is happening all over again. It's like, what, this was 9 years ago, Dick? And nothing has changed. I'm amazed. Nothing at all has changed.
Except that it's become more sped up. Look at Enron. Frank was talking about how corporations are stealing a lot more money than most of your petty criminals. And yet, the focus of the media is, of course, on the petty criminals. So now we've seen the media forced to look at some of the things that we've been saying on this TV show all these years, which is that, you know, the people who are stealing the most money are the ones who already have the most money. And they're getting away with it.
We're going to go into our... second clip of Frank Girard, who unfortunately passed away a couple of months ago. And he's sorely missed, certainly. But we're here to celebrate Frank's career as an idealistic radical tonight, a proud Marxist and a longtime proud member of the Western Michigan community. If we could go with our second roll-in. We're ready for that anytime, and we'll be back. And eventually, about a quarter to nine, we'll be taking your calls, so stay tuned for that. Are we ready with Roland number two?
It sounds pretty true to me and true to the realities of the thing. You know, you look at the amount of money, and what do they call a kind of government that's run by rich people? Plutocracy, yeah. I guess there are various names for it. But rather obviously, what's happening here, and you look at those amounts of money, you could say to yourself, well, Well, this is a campaign by actually money. And in fact, cartoon in the Z magazine. Any of you see this cartoon in Z magazine where the suggestion was made that we ought to have a monocracy? They come right out and call it a monocracy, and $1, one vote. And
there you go.
Let it go like that. Some of us would have negative votes. Those of us in debt probably. Yeah.
Kind of Nader spin on the duopoly yeah. word.
Yeah, right. Well, I'd like to make the, you know, you suggested the, Tom, you suggested the three possibilities or four possibilities. One of them was don't vote. And now I realize a moment ago, we were discussing this just a moment ago in among ourselves, and the case of a case in Israel where the people who did not vote constituted a number of people large enough so that Netanyahu won in Israel. But you know, you really come down to it. It's kind of hard to figure out much of a difference between Netanyahu and
that's right.
Peres, his opponent, you know, as far as
that's right.
being rotten people who are doing mean things to Palestinians. So I don't know. I'd like to make the case, though, for not voting. In other words, vote no on this election. That's the way I'd put it. And I realize that I'm not going to get 100% agreement from my colleagues here. But
what about some of the ballots?
Hey, you know, there you saw Frank Girard, and that was from October 30th, 1996, just before the 1996 congressional and interim elections in the United States. And he was saying, don't vote, you know, that it's all one party. And this is something that, you know, Frank said that wasn't necessarily, I mean, we kind of understood where he was coming from, but it wasn't necessarily really popular with the majority of the rest of the group over the years. But he certainly set up, successive waves of controversy with that idea, and it's still with us.
He always said, don't vote, it just encourages.
But he said, you know, it was the rule by money. And, you know, right there you saw one of the people, the guy who was on the far left of your screen, he was our director in those days, most of the time, for this television show, and he was actually fired after he appeared on the television show one time, and we called him W.C. Struggle after that. You know, he was no longer known by his actual name in the credits, but he actually got fired because some of his coworkers saw him and they tattled on the boss, and there you see what Frank was calling monocracy, the rule of money. You know, and to Frank, you know, this was the basic, the elemental thing, you know, that one always had to pay attention to. And he really stuck to that idea. We're going to take some comments.
Does anyone here agree with Frank that you shouldn't vote? Because that's one of the things that Frank and I always disagreed on. I mean, I admit it does seem to lend legitimacy to the system as it exists, but I don't think that we should disavow any power that we have, even if it's just slight and vestigial. You know,
I didn't agree with Frank either. I would always vote for the lesser of the two evils, but I can understand Frank saying what he did. It implies faith in the system, and you know, he didn't have any faith in the system, and I can perfectly understand why he didn't. The monocracy system, you know, a government of the wealthy, by the wealthy, and for the wealthy.
I call it a kleptocracy.
Kleptocracy, yeah, and there was absolutely no difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. They're all financed by, they call them lobbyists and special interest groups, but let's face it, let's call a lobbyist for what they should be called.
Yeah.
It's a bribe that you give to a lobbyist.
Which was a very basic point that Frank kept bringing up. What do you say, Mr. Chaplin, to that?
Well, I respected Frank as a human being. He was a member of the Socialist Labor Party, which was a Marxist party, although not communist. One of the things maybe our listeners and viewers don't understand is that there is a difference between socialist, communist, and Marxist. And the Socialist Labor Party was a party which believed in a socialist industrial union form of government. And Frank and other people who did run for office always said that if they were elected, they would vote to disband the state. But I don't really believe in that myself. I believe that if a person wants to not vote because they think the candidates, neither one of them, I did that when John Engler ran against Jeffrey Figer. I just didn't vote for either one of them because I thought they were both jerks. But it had nothing to do with the fact that I believe that socialism is a better form of an economic system than capitalism. I do believe that. But until we get there, you know, you have to do something. I think it's interesting how a lot of socialists don't believe in religion because they think it's stupid to wait for someone who died 2,000 years ago to come back and straighten everything out. And yet, a lot of socialists are waiting for the working class to wake up. Well, they've probably taken longer than 2,000 years to wake up. They still haven't woken up. There's people right now that belong to unions, 40% of whom vote Republican. And, you know, again, I respected Frank. He kind of kept me on the straight and narrow, but I respectfully disagree with him on certain issues. I think that to not vote is something the Republicans love because the Republicans will always turn out to vote. And if people, and unfortunately, we don't have a viable left third party. It's not the Socialist Labor Party or the Socialist Party or the Green Party or anything like that. Like it or not, your choice is between Democrats and Republicans. And really, your best choice, if you're a leftist, I think, is to make sure that the most leftward, electorally viable person gets nominated for the Democrats.
Dick, why do you think Frank really felt strongly that people shouldn't vote?
Well, he addressed it humorously, occasionally saying, for example, that already in this country, 50% of the people don't vote in any given election, and probably even more of that. So don't you want to be part of the majority? Is a good reason for not voting. But not on more seriously, he said that there essentially is no choice. We're given a choice of candidates, but not a choice of program. For example, NAFTA. Bush the Elder was in favor of NAFTA, but he couldn't get it through Congress. And candidate Clinton opposed NAFTA, but when he became president, he got it through, achieved something that Bush couldn't do. So what's the difference? And so there isn't really any choice when it comes to voting. You're given a choice of personality, and that's about it. So it's only the illusion of democracy.
Mm-hmm. You get personality, and then you get the stab in the back, maybe.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Gore would have invaded Iraq so unilaterally?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think he would invade at all.
Either. I think that this is a special, you know, extreme, you know, right-wing cabal of the Republican Party that gives us this sort of adventuring into empire.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, Gore would not have wanted to avenge Daddy.
True.
Well, we're going to go into...
And Gore wasn't called by God to spread democracy
In
to
fact,
all the countries of the world.
I would suggest that people should watch The Jesus Factor tomorrow night on PBS. Thursday, The Jesus Factor, that's Frontline at 10 p.m., and that's all about how the born-again Christians in the United States said, George Bush II, he has the anointing, he is the chosen of Jehovah, you know, and all this kind of thing.
Chosen of the Supreme Court.
And we're ready for our third Frank Girard retrospective. Roland, we can go with that. We'll be back in a moment.
Well, God works in a regular legal strategy.
What you say, absolutely true. It's putting a pressure on the working class to continue to accept lower wages, no benefits, because they have all this pool of people who are actually going to be working, taking over more and more of the workload for less than minimum wage now.
I don't think anyone here would say that people on welfare shouldn't work. We believe that everyone should have meaningful work. We think that some people get way too much overtime, so we think that everybody should have meaningful work. Our problem is in the way the workers are being exploited. As Richard DeVos said on our program last week, the most important thing in this economic equation is who owns the tools.
Right, and this is the problem. We don't own the tools. If we did own the tools, we could share the work.
Exactly.
Share it and share it equally, and share what we produce. But this is the rotten problem. You know, one of the things.
We know. Go ahead, Frank. Finish
One
it,
of the
your
things
point.
That they've been talking about is that this is this welfare reform bill is in effect a revolution, because up till now, from about the 1930s until now, the assumption has always been that we have a right to live in this country, to have a life. But you see, if they can take welfare away from us, you know, and welfare is a much, you know, it's a, what is it, 2/3 of a poverty level.
Yeah.
If they can take that away from you, then they can in effect take away your right to live. So you can be a member of the family in this country, you know, a member of this family, a family of U.S. But that doesn't entitle you to a place at the table anymore. I think that's something that we ought to give some thought to. You know, simply being an American and being a resident here doesn't entitle you to live here. You aren't entitled to anything except, I guess you could say, to be exploited. If you can get a job and the gang that runs the show can use you and make money off you, you have a right to live here. Otherwise, you don't. You have a right to starve here, perhaps, or live on the street, or whatever.
It's time for
it's a shameless thing.
It's the
richest country in the world, incidentally.
I'm not sure if the most vicious, actually, but
I said the richest.
Oh, the richest, yes.
Might be the most vicious now. Now it's being run by some awful vicious people.
It's time for a word from our sponsors. Afterwards, we will be opening the phones for your comments or questions. Our number is 459-4881. We'll have some.
Oh, I think maybe there was some more of that there.
No,
is that over?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
That was just a commercial there.
Okay. You know, you saw Frank Girard. Frank Girard, our founder, the idealist who was accepting of various viewpoints that leaned in his own direction, who came up to us all and many of us and recruited us by saying, "Do you think that capitalism is the root of all evil?" And then if you said, "Well, maybe not the root of all evil," he'd say, "Well, the root of most evil." And then you say, "Well, maybe most evil." Hey, you know, you can join our society for $1. It takes an idealist and an expansive personality, an accepting personality, to put together a movement. And Frank Girard was that kind of a person.
Can I say something about Frank?
Okay.
You know, Frank was a man with a very strong sense of right and wrong. You keep calling him an idealist. He called himself a materialist.
Right.
But he came to his materialism because he saw that there was injustice in the world. And he thought that he knew the cause of it, and he thought he knew the solution for it, and he believed in those things. And those kinds of people can be very dangerous type of people. But Frank was a kind and generous person to whom many people owe a debt, including myself. When I was almost homeless a few years ago, he lent me $300, and when he died, I still owed him 100 of it. And he never went, "Stephen, where's my money?"
You know? Actually, he didn't want me to speak to you about that.
Oh, okay.
In fact, there was a point early in the history of this television show when it was just starting, and Frank Girard lent our original director trainee, who never quite made it to that point, a great deal of money in order to keep his house and his life together, because Frank never neglected his family or his own situation.
That's right.
But he always could afford it at all, he would support the movement, and he was nothing if he wasn't an extremely generous person. Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to comment on one point Frank made during that little speech there about the right to live in this country, and how welfare, of course, has now been changed to something called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, which Bill Clinton, to his discredit, did push for, much more even so than NAFTA, because NAFTA, as Dick indicated, was something that was basically inherited from Bush Sr., whereas Bill Clinton made a promise to end welfare as we know it.
He made a promise for universal health care, too.
Right. But
but
unfortunately, he kept his promise with regard to welfare. Now, the right to life that Frank mentioned there is very important, because some people, even by design in the capitalist system, are kept poor, even those that work. But it's very interesting how the Republicans, the conservative Republicans, especially those that are quite wealthy, will say that they're pro-life, but they're only pro-life for the fetus, basically. As soon as the person is born, unless it happens to be born into a wealthy family, that child, or, you know, for as long as it lives, up to becoming an adult and thereafter, if it stays poor, he or she stays poor, then there's no responsibility on the government's part to support that individual.
To be fair, all pro-lifers are not also social Darwinists. There are plenty of pro-lifers.
No, and I'm one of them.
Believe in.
I'm one of them. Yeah. I'm pro-life, but I'm simply saying the hypocrisy of people that say they're pro-life. I consider myself pro-life up until the point of conception and thereafter. But I mean, a lot of Republicans aren't.
I think that Frank's basic point was that the idea of the national family, that we're some kind of family, is something that's promoted only by the upper class, by the ruling class, only for their own benefit. You know, they want people to believe in that. They want people to vote that way. They want people to think that way who are in the lower classes. But they themselves have been abandoning all the rest of us for an awful long time. And you can see that in the way that they are farming out the economy to the rest of the world. You know, and even though Frank would disagree with this perspective, the immigration policies that essentially eliminate the border. Frank was not a nationalist in any way. Some of us are somewhat, but I think that there again you see the impulse on the part of the ruling class is not an egalitarian impulse that everyone should be here. They only want people really to be here for economic reasons, to drive down wages, etc. Although Frank was nothing if not a person with an extremely egalitarian, non-racist and non-nationalist sort of perspective. And Dick, you have anything to say?
Yeah, I think it's something else in addition to that, and that is that as a socialist, Frank was interested in class consciousness.
Yes.
That he saw all of the injustices and so on to people in our society as not just to individuals, but to the working class. And so I think you could, when you talk about family, you could extend that to Frank's insistence on class consciousness, because he was a class-conscious member of the working class.
Well, he felt that only through class consciousness can people get a kind of a hold on, kind of a reality check on their own ass, so to speak. Where am I? What are my actual interests? Because there are people like the Bush family, for instance, who will pretend, in a sense, they will give you the illusion that I'm one of you, but if you would just pinch yourself in the butt, you'd realize that it's not true. He's not one of you. And he's leading you down the rosy path to the slaughterhouse, perhaps.
But Frank wasn't a hater even of the ruling class. He felt pity for the ruling class because of what their great wealth did to them as well. He felt that it deformed them, you know, that it destroyed their families, dehumanized their families. Frank basically lived a middle-class life.
Successfully, you know? Sorry, yes.
Yeah, and was very much a family man.
Yes.
And I think that he saw capitalism as not just brutalizing to the poorest amongst us, but brutalizing to the people at the top who have too much power and too much money and too much time on their hands. And Frank always wanted everyone to sort of have the kind of life he had. And sort of, I know, he felt uncomfortable with the bohemianism of some of the people in the group, I think.
Most of the rest
but of he was own. Never, he was never, how would you say, he wasn't a hater. He didn't.
No.
He never hated, I never heard him. You know, he got indignant. The gang who runs the show, you know, they're really sticking it to the poor. But he knew that those people, too, were having their lives devalued.
I think so. Rochelle,
yes,
Margo.
To attest to Frank's middle classness, you know, middle of the road type person, how I met Frank is kind of interesting. I met Frank through my father. My father met Frank at apparently some meeting here in Grand Rapids, and after he had met Frank and attended the meeting, and again, it was about class consciousness and et cetera, and all of Frank's beliefs, his egalitarianism, my father said, oh, you really must meet this man. And I did, and my dad said, you know, you would like him immediately because he has a lot of the same ideals and principles that you do. And so I met Frank through my father, and I liked him immediately, what he stood for. There were a few things that I disagreed with him on, but all in all, I agreed very much with Frank's big picture.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go with roll-in number four. This is Frank Girard on July 31st, 1996, and this was from an episode of CTV and of OSEC NUC, which he named, by the way, as a show, as a series. And the title of that show was A Sky Full of Holes. So if we could go with that, we'll go with that.
Let's regain some lost ground. Now down 21/32 of a point, raising the yield to 6.77%. Right now the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 21 points at 34.19. Big board volume is having 186 million shares traded so far.
Grandpa!
What?
Will I grow up to be big and strong like you?
I sure hope so, son.
Why wouldn't I, Grandpa?
Well, unless something is done soon, big old trees like me will be nothing but a memory, like the giants in the old fairy tales.
But, Grandpa, what would the forest be without olds like you?
I think they call it a tree farm, son.
Disintegrated as the commissars of the Communist Party. And these cultural focus pretty much deal with developing the way to look at activities in society through their own prism, through their own interest. And they devolve that way through the educational system, the communication system, etc. Sometimes they do it so heavy-handedly that people mouth the slogans of compliance to the regime, but they don't really believe it. That's 1984, Orwell. Sometimes they do it in a much more astute controlling process. They do it where the very restrictions on free and critical inquiry are internalized by the people themselves and adopted. That's Huxley's Brave New World. And the difference between the two is critical in understanding how we all grow up corporate. Let me give you some illustrations. If I utter the following words, what comes to your mind immediately by way of images? Crime, violence, welfare, addictors. Well, what would come to your mind probably is street crime, people lining up to get their welfare checks, violence in the streets, and drug dealers, addictors.
Well, welcome back to Oh Say Can You See. At this point, we can tell you that our phone number is 459-4881, and we'll be accepting quick calls for quick comments or questions.
I have a quick comment.
Oh, you have one about Ralph Nader.
Yeah, Ralph Nader. You know, I haven't got anything with Ralph Nader. He means well. But, you know, the problem is simply that who's president isn't what's at issue here. Presidents aren't going to change this. The problem is the economic system and who controls it. You see, that's the thing. We can have we can get rid of this problem, but it's not going to be done by who's president.
Well, you know,
and Nader has no plans for ending capitalism at all.
Well,
he wants a nice, friendly capitalism that isn't concerned about
profits. He wants a capitalism composed of responsible corporate citizens. He feels that that's some kind of possibility. Maybe we could call him a
what does he call it?
A corporate citizen?
You mean like corporations will be good citizens? Is that it?
Well,
and not stop making
the
profits.
He would say that the law would force them to be so. I mean, he would be all for attempting that, and might he not be a good
stopping off
from the July 15th issue of The Nation. Behind the ecological degradation and growing inequalities have been several hundred powerful corporations and banks whose ambit is now global. Consequently, societies everywhere on the planet are less able to address environmental and social needs. I think that's what Frank was trying to say, and I don't think that you're going to be able to reform their behavior.
You are going to reform the behavior of corporations. They act the way they act because that's
give
their nature.
Call,
any more than you reform a shark.
8-1.
Sharks do certain things. That's the business of a shark. That's why it exists. Why do you suppose corporations and capitalists exist? To do certain things. You aren't going to change them by changing the President of the United States, even though he's a nice guy.
What do you say, John?
My opinion is there are steps that can be taken to eliminate CFC production. However, as long as there's capitalism, I mean, the prime motive of capitalism is to generate capital. And as long as CFCs generate capital, they're still going to continue to go up in the air.
Well, that's why there absolutely has to be some way to curtail this corporate behavior. One way or another, it has to change, or rather than the problem going away, maybe we're all going away for one of various reasons, CFCs and disappearing ozone.
Well, hey, that was from a show on July 31st, 1996, A Sky Full of Holes, and that was about ozone layer depletion and actual dead zones that had been discovered where the plankton life had died in the oceans and fish life was declining, and that's something that we're still seeing now, but you don't hear all that much about it. Frank was on top of it. He said it's sharks doing what sharks do. It's the capitalist doing what the capitalist does. Nothing else matters. It's all short-term thinking. And Frank was certainly the most influential member of our group, I would say, and he was always pulling us in his direction. I suppose he was a little bit disappointed that more of us didn't go totally in his own direction, but we'll take some comments on that segment.
The sharks. I can identify with the sharks. I produced two shows, I know for sure, maybe three, on CEO pay, and I remember the title of one of them was called CEOs, Hood Ornaments of the World, and of course it was a play on words here, hoods and ornaments, and you got it. But Frank was on my panel. I invited him to be there. And he presented this fact to me. He said, Margo, do you suppose that if you lowered the CEO's pay and perhaps gave them a decent salary rather than a totally despicable stratospheric salary, would that have any difference in corporations and corporate behavior? And of course, I responded, well, no, it wouldn't. We still have the capitalistic system. So Frank, to his credit, pointed that out to me. But again, that wasn't really the reason why I did the show. It was to draw attention. Because many people think that the unions have outpriced themselves out of jobs. And
Betsy
I don't
DeVos was
Betsy
just
really believe
so
that.
Last week.
Yeah.
But can I say a word for the sharks?
Right.
It slanders the sharks to compare them to human beings in that way, because the sharks are just being fully shark. They're doing what sharks do.
Well, it's what it says a capitalist is doing what a capitalist
does.
Well, except I think Steve's point is that a
capitalist isn't necessarily fully human, because human beings, like Frank, have these other qualities.
I think that was Frank's point.
Ideas of justice and things like that, and if you don't have that, then you're not fully human.
Is Betsy DeVos fully human? Maybe we can do a show.
I don't really believe that Betsy DeVos is fully human to the potential that she could be. I think that you just have to listen to the things that she says and realize that she probably doesn't fully believe them herself, to realize that she's some kind of a media predator. I have to say something about what Frank said there and why I think it's significant. And what much of Frank says needs to be thought of, and what your response is to it, I'd be interested in, is Frank really had a complaint about this group, and many people. You know, he was impatient for a good Marxism a Marxist society to occur, but he always felt that what was needed ultimately would be people who wouldn't be drawn into one-issue politics. You know, the environment, he felt, all you people, you mamby-pamby people, you tree huggers, you're going after saving the environment, but in the meantime, you don't go after the root. You don't yank the root down, and the root is the capitalist system. He said, all you people who are peace people, you know, or people who want to defend native populations in the world from being exploited by oil corporations or whatever, you got to yank the root down. And we will all go, Frank, we... You know, we've got to meet our allies where we can. Now, I'm interested in some responses to that complaint, Frank.
I'd like to comment on that. I think Frank was dead on. I think that we find people dividing among race, or I should say by race, by gender. Certainly peace is a good thing. The environment is certainly completely indispensable to us. But I think Frank did have a point there that people get divided on trivial issues. I mean, gay marriage, for or against it, I'm personally against it, but I can't see amending the Constitution, for instance. I was also struck by the fact that last night at the City Commission meeting, I heard on the news this morning, this is a local issue, and we are in Grand Rapids, not one single person turned up for a budget hearing, and yet over 300 people showed up to urge the commissioners to rename Franklin Street Martin Luther King Boulevard. Now, where are people's priorities?
God. No, I didn't know that. That's,
yes.
It really makes you wonder.
People are stupid.
Well, I shouldn't. You said it. I didn't. But I guess some people are stupid.
Most, unfortunately.
Dick, so do you think there's intelligence
about the
root?
What do you think about
maybe the
Frank's... issue about root causes and his poo-pooing the individual issues?
Well, yeah, I think as a socialist that he was interested in socialism. He was interested in having a society which is run by the working class, in which the goods and services that we produce are shared as we share the work. And as a result, he saw these other issues as they were important and so on, but they weren't really the what our focus should be as members of the working class and for our liberation. That's also why he was against voting, because he said that when it comes to voting, Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence says the governments derive their power from the consent of the governed. And it was important for us not to vote to show that we do not consent.
Okay, we're going to leave it at that. We're going to go into our next roll-in. When we come back, we'll be briefly open for some calls. And so we go to Frank Girard, roll-in number 5. Frank Girard, retrospective, the successful happy life of a radical, part 1. Are we...
Anybody there?
James.
Are you there, James?
How are you tonight?
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
Listen, I've been listening to the show, and it's kind of interesting tonight, but I'd like to have some of your answers on solutions of what we're going to do with this.
Well...
I mean, I hear a lot of griping, but I don't see solutions. I want to hear solutions.
Well, we, as a group, we don't have any particular solution. We have various ideas, and most of them involve simply getting rid of this economic system itself.
How are you going to do that?
The problem is a capitalist system. The solution, from my point of view, is simply abolish it. We've got to somehow get rid of this profit system that twists and distorts and everything that is connected with it.
Well, it's imperial in its nature.
It's what?
It's imperial in its nature.
I would think so. Certainly imperialist.
It's gotten to the point where... you had made a statement earlier about, you know, where did all these workers come from? And we're getting a lot of Mexicans coming up here from Mexico because we can't move the plants there. They're bringing them here. And at the same time, wages are being anchored to the bottom. Most of the people, I make about $14 an hour. But most people I know are making $7 or $8 an hour, and that's the average here in Michigan as far as general labor work.
I would think that's true.
You know,
certainly factory workers.
Yeah, it is.
And farm workers.
And it's going down. It's going down. I mean, you know, like in 1979, I made $8 an hour. Most people are making that 21 years later. I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be some solutions, and I'd like to hear more of the solutions of what you got in mind. And how are you going to abolish a system when everybody's brainwashed into it?
What I would really...
You,
proposes really to try to strive for an economic democracy, really, for lack of a better definition. Really, quite simply, we should be able to make decisions about things that affect our lives. And I feel that, by and large, the citizenry, not just of this country, but of the world as a whole, most people don't really have that power over their lives. And I think if we pull it together, that can be attained.
But I think the most radical solution would be for the workers to take the means of production under their control. Now, of course, the capitalists aren't going to allow that. They're going to call in the police or the National Guard or the Army or what have you. And that wouldn't do anybody any good. There'd be too much violence and a lot of people would get hurt. I think short of that, I think that people have to vote. And I think they have to vote for pro-labor candidates. I mean, in West Michigan, organized laborers, those two words are swear words. So I think people have to realize that they are being used by the capitalists and they're being exploited many times under the guise of religion. And I think if the people can wake up and realize that, as the caller says, people are making as much as they did 20 years ago, and they're supposed to be grateful for it because the master of the plantation isn't letting them starve.
I think that what we have to do, my solution would not be voting for candidates, but rather workers are simply going to have to, as you said, walk in and take over the means of production.
But that's not practical because they're going to be shot down.
I don't think that's so. I don't think that's so. Any kind of when conditions get bad enough so that workers are, our class is desperate enough to make this important move.
The only way for that to happen, Frank, is if the police and the military, who are part of the working class, realize that they are and join us.
Our job is to teach this,
yes,
to explain it, to get the message across to people that the cause of your problem is a confounded economic system. They call it capitalism. And like any other system, it can be changed and eliminated, and a new system take its place. In fact, it's even possible to do under the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I can't think of more.
I don't think it's so much us teaching them. I think it's people just getting together.
There you have it. Yes. Frank Girard, successful family man, teacher in the public schools, longtime retired founder of the Society for Economic Equality and of this television show, Oh Say Can You See. We have a television call-in caller. His name is Steve. Go ahead, Steve. Your question, your comment. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I've been watching. Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely.
I just wanted to say I've been watching you guys almost since the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And I pretty much am on the other end of the spectrum here. But I want to say that I am glad you guys are on. And I didn't realize Frank Girard founded you guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need debate in this country. And like I said, I disagree with you. And almost across the boards, I vehemently disagree with you guys. But I enjoy watching you. I do. And, you know, keep it up. I mean, you guys believe what you believe. I think you're wrong. But you know what? I could be wrong.
Can you tell us one?
Yeah,
wow,
you could be wrong, and Frank Girard wasn't. I don't think he was necessarily right all the time. So,
but he was a great gardener. I want to ask the caller: is there anything you agree with us on?
Boy, well, I think Marx was really on to something when he talked about people being alienated from their work. I think that's a truth, but I don't think it's a peculiarity of capitalism. I bet you, if you ask back in the ancient Egyptians when they were planting rice and building pyramids, how in tune they were with their work.
Marx.
You know, I mean, or how far back you want to go in a hunter-gathering society.
Right.
I think work has always sucked.
Right.
It's always been hard carving a life out of this planet.
Right. I'm not a Marxist myself, but I think Marx's point was that capitalism was an improvement upon what preceded it, which was feudalism, and feudalism was an improvement upon what preceded that. But I guess his point was is that at some point in time during his lifetime, he felt that it was time to move on to the next type of economic system.
Well, he hoped for a system that wouldn't be exploitative. You know,
right,
some people will say, well, that's just too idealistic.
Sure. And I guess I would agree with that statement. I don't think it's a finished product. God, I hope not. I mean, I hope capitalism is not the end game of human development, because there's just too many problems with it. But I think it is an evolutionary process, and I'm all for change, but we got to have something to replace it with.
Right.
What I'm troubled with sometimes with you guys is when you talk about, you know, throwing it out and eliminating it, well, then what?
No, I don't believe that. I mean, some of my brethren here and sisters may believe that, but I feel that we do have to have something in place. It's like if you want to move into a new house, you don't tear down your old house before you build a new one.
Exactly.
Okay, and some people just want to extend democracy to the workplace so that the people who are actually doing the work end up having more say in what work is done, how it's done, what the safety standards and the ethics of it are. Because my opinion is just that democracy is the only way that we can really deal with the conflicts we have with each other.
What you just said, Steve, might... referencing our caller here, Steve, that this might remedy the fact that work kind of sucks.
If you had more say in what you were doing,
you could rotate jobs, things of that nature,
right.
Control your output, control your input, produce for the needs of people rather than for someone's profit.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the strangest thing that has happened during these years that I've known Frank is that the United States has been denuding itself of employment and of resources, of capital. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen, and I think Frank was in tune to why that was. Now, Steve, we thank you for your call. We're going to go to Professor Ed. Professor Ed, go ahead. Your question or comment,
well,
Professor?
Well, just a personal one. I missed your first half hour of your show, but Frank, I only knew a few years, but he suffered fools gladly, and I apply that statement to myself.
Yeah, you would know.
And no matter how outrageous I was, he sort of put up with it. And with good humor, that was part of his charm, and certainly it's part of the reason I'm very fond of him. But in addition, Frank had this capacity, I think, to simultaneously see socialism as some future state, but then be able to find specific issues, all of which he could interpret with a socialist perspective, all of which were slightly different paths to getting to a more equal, an economic democracy, a society of equality, and a society of equal power. And he, therefore, would be active in a lot of specific issues. I don't think he saw the dichotomy you guys were discussing earlier. He didn't appreciate getting alliances with people who have just a single focus, whether it was... you are out of time. Sorry.
Oh, well, Professor, you must be psychic because they're all giving me the wrap-up signal. How much time do we have left?
Final words, like 30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. Hey, thank you, Ed. Thank you, Steve.